The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadot Jewelers. KFNC at KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
He went five innings on the road with no runs allowed. That was his second-best start on the road this year. We're underway with a fastball into Jose Altuve. Altuve normally greeted with less than enthusiastic response here in Seattle. He takes one up and in, and now they'll cheer. It's 1-0.
Yeah, just chuck it up near his head and get a cheer out of the crowd.
Not once, but twice, George Kirby throws up and in on Jose Altuve, and Mariners fans at T-Mobile Park cheered it. Gallant and George on a Thursday, May 30th. Joe, you made a face when you heard that.
I like how TK just like so effortlessly was just like up and in and a cheer. And just like, he's just like right into it. I just don't understand why we're still doing this. Because it's clearly intentional.
I don't know how many fan bases still do this. I asked the question, and it was a passive-aggressive way, Pacific Northwestern language, to try and communicate with some of my Seattle followers, to essentially ask, why is it that, of all fan bases, Mariners fans are the ones who cheer when Altuve gets thrown up and in? I don't think Yankees fans do. They don't play the Dodgers enough for the Dodgers fans to probably do it. I'm sure they boo him. Do they cheer when he gets thrown up and in? Maybe they do. Maybe I'm making too much out of last night. But last night it was noticeable to the point where I found myself annoyed.
I think Yankees fans would. So this would be my list of teams of fans I would expect to cheer Altuve being thrown high and tight. Obviously the Mariners, they've shown us twice last night they'll do it. The Yankees, I would say the Dodgers, if you play in Dodger Stadium, but it's almost just a guess at this point because it so rarely happens. I would include the Rangers in that, Rangers fans. Just after everything that's happened with Garcia last year and the way the series went, that if they threw up tight at Altuve, that Rangers fans would probably get a kick out of
it. I think they'd like throwing up and tight against any Astro, though. I don't know that it would be specifically Altuve, and that's why it's different with this situation. I feel like it is uniquely Altuve that they get super hot and bothered about getting thrown up and in against. And by the way, Seattle photographer, who is my buddy, who was in the Astros dugout last night, went out of his way to tell me Altuve spent a lot of time after the game signing autographs for kids. Classy guy.
I don't get why. I get why Mariners fans wouldn't like the Houston Astros. 2022. A, they're in the same division. 2022 ALDS. Close fought sweep. Them and last year's Lakers. Closest sweeps in NBA history. What I don't get, though, is the animus directed just at Jose Altuve. When, if you think about the, like, if it's about the sign ceilings, like, who cares? You're losing 90 games that year anyway. Like, that's why it's okay for the Yankees and Dodgers to get upset, or it's understandable. For the Mariners, it's like, no, you should be mad at Yordan Alvarez and Jeremy Pena, because those are the guys that hit the walk-offs, or I guess Pena wasn't a walk-off, but those are the guys that gave it the big hits that, again, the closest sweep you could ever have. That's what sent them home, not Jose Altuve. I mean, Jose Altuve was I don't think he was good that series.
I mean, his career stats are pretty damn good against the Mariners. He's got 311 batting average, 18 home runs, 88 RBIs in 171 games. So he does dominate them.
Yeah, that's like a full season
on a pretty consistent basis.
But that's, I guess.
But even then,
I guess this is me just disrespecting the Mariners. But it's like all those are regular season games that they went somewhere between 90 wins and 70 wins every year during the most of that stretch.
How many people do you think care, let alone know, that Jose Altuve, per his teammates, was the guy who was saying, I don't want to be a part of this?
That's a good question.
Like a quarter? Like 25% no, 0% care?
I don't know if it's a very high percentage at all.
I do think some of it is like, we see this a lot like throughout sports and honestly just throughout like media where it's like, it's a little bit of the why does everyone hate Nickelback thing, because it's like, oh, that's just the thing you do. Where it's like, why do you hate Jose Altuve? Because it's kind of the thing you do. Like I don't think all 20,000 Mariners fans that are at the stadium last night have like really hard feelings about the 2017 cheating scandal.
Yeah,
seriously doubt that.
I saw Ben Verlander put this out last night. He tweeted about this.
He was hot and bothered,
and his tweets got like 280,000 views on at this point. And
lots of Astros fans replying.
Yes. And a lot of Mariners fans going out his way, because Ben did take it to an extreme. He said, I honestly think if he got hit in the head and died on the field, people would cheer. So like he got
I was like, how did he take it to the extreme?
He took it
as far as he can go.
He took it as far as he can go. He's like, if he dies on the field, they're gonna cheer. Like
I think it's smatter.
So.
I think it's smatter.
So.
Before they knew he died, there'd be a smatter.
Do you think the Russians would have cheered if Apollo died in Russia?
Yes.
In Rocky?
Yes.
You think so?
I think so.
I mean, they cheered for Rocky when he beat Drago.
Yeah, but that's because he showed that we can change. You can change. I can change.
You're right.
We can all change.
Touche. Maybe that's what Jose Altuve needs to do. He needs to throw it at someone.
Ground ball
to second base and just chuck it at Julio Rodriguez.
Dirty slide.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I would kind of like some retaliation action. It's fun when the Astros and Mariners drop gloves. I do enjoy it. And I'm wondering if things get out of hand today, if someone on the Astros decides to do it. Weirdly, this is a game where I kind of wish Framber Valdez, completely untrustworthy in a must-win game, was on the hill. I kind of want this to be an afternoon disaster. I want this to be one of those really messy ones. I don't like what happened last night. I truly don't. And I asked that question last night. Do Yankees fans also cheer when Altuve takes a pitch up and in? And one person basically confirmed exactly what I was trying to get to. He said, like, there's two up and in, two cheers? Good. There's something different there, and it's weird. This city that I lived in, that I worked in, that considers itself so empathetic that they're willing to let homeless people take over a playground at a school so they can shoot up fentanyl. You laugh, Joe. That actually happened.
I know it does.
That's an actual story. That was a deal for 4 to 5 months. They have empathy there, and yet this guy who's signing autographs for young Mariners fans after the game, who is truly one of the most humble and best role models in the sport, they get excited when a ball is thrown up and in on them. And they have no explanation for it. I would text the group chat that I'm still in with some of those Seattle folks, but the last time I talked to them about Astros Mariners, after the Yordan Alvarez home run, because they were saying F Houston, and I got a little upset, I sent them a video saying, welcome to the real playoffs, because they played in the fake playoffs there. They would probably react to it very hostile. But I don't think they'd have an answer for it. I really don't. There is a weird vitriol that is directed at Jose Altuve, specifically by Seattle fans, that is strange to me because it feels higher than that of the Yankees and of the Dodgers. And as you guys said, Joe, like, it's one of these things where
you would think that it would be the Yankees fans who are more mad at him, or the Dodgers fans that are more mad about him, or as Sean said, it would be mad about Jeremy Pena or Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, it feels even within just the bickering between the fan base, and social media doesn't tell the whole story, and that's why like the Altuve stuff, how many people know and just ignore it, I think is a minimal, because I think outside of Twitter, like I don't know how many people acknowledge even when Jeff Passan tweets or Ben Verlander or anyone, even these national reporters, they all acknowledge that Jose Altuve didn't cheat. And I don't think that many people acknowledge it because there's not even that many people on social media. But there does seem on social media to be, of the beefs between Astros Twitter versus other fan Twitter, the Mariners one does always seem to be the most
violent,
ugly. Yeah. I mean, like they dox Jeremy.
It's weird being right in the middle of it.
No.
It's weird being in the middle of it. I mean, when I was in Seattle, I did sort of sick Seattle fans on Ben DeBose, and he went private for a little bit of time.
Oh, that's just another day that ends in
you Y. Can't end. You can't go private. You can't go private.
It's so funny. I click on his Twitter account. What do I see?
Private?
He's arguing with Mariners fans about them throwing high and tight and Altuve.
Joe, I think I'm the reason Jeremy got doxxed, too. Because I retweeted something that he said.
Oh, no.
It was like some Scott Service. Because, of course, it was Scott Service being a clown. And, Jeremy said something. Just said something that was vaguely pro-Astros. Might have just been anti-Scott Service. And Paul just gave it a little sneaky retweet.
Just a retweet.
And just low-key sick the Mariners faithful on.
I'm an agent of chaos. What can I say?
It's always Paul's fault. That's what we learned today.
I could be that guy. I'm the hero that Houston needs right now and the hero that Houston deserves. I also deserve more money.
It is weird how rabid the Mariners fan base seems to be for a team that, like,
sucks.
For a city that, like you said, like doesn't seem like they're the most, like, live and die with all this stuff. And then also, this team has given you no reason to be this passionate at any point in its in the last 20 years. They were good in 2001.
Honestly, it's probably, to me, like from the outside perspective, it seems like one of the best like sports cities in the country. Like the way they act now, the way they act at their soccer games, like they're incredible.
No, they actually care.
They are consistently the loudest football stadium in the NFL.
They just couldn't support a basketball team. That's why they're
playing. And they're going to get the Sonics back.
They just didn't care.
Maybe that's why they're mad at everything, because like they just don't have KD.
It's just rage.
They only got
it's
a year of KD.
Misguided rage. Yeah.
Maybe that's why they hate Houston, because they never got to see James Harden play for the Sonics.
No, it's definitely not that. I think they would have been like, you know what, you can Oklahoma City, you can take the Sonics if that loser's playing for us.
Trying to figure something out.
Joe, I mean, they love the WNBA, for God's sakes. Like, that's the one city that actually supports the WNBA and gets really mad at you if you don't follow along and watch it. Like, I got bullied into watching WNBA games when I was up there. Anyway, no one cares about that. Joe George, Paul Gallant, it's Gallant and George, Sean Mapes behind the glass. Up next, I said we're going to do something fun instead of getting mad about the Astros. We don't want to be angry, okay? We're hoping some positive vibes come their way with Spencer Arrighetti on the hill. Big game this afternoon. Got to win it. Can't lose 4 in Seattle. Can't lose 6 of the first 7 to Seattle. So up next, let's have a little bit of fun.
In the sports talk radio world, sports radio hosts love to criticize underperforming players. But in the United States of America, every citizen is provided defense if they cannot afford it. Like now, when the producer forces one of the hosts to defend somebody who's indefensible. These are their stories.
Back to Dick Wolf, if you listen to the Adele show today.
We're introducing a new segment.
Let's go.
I suppose this is a lot like that television show where people tried out on ESPN back in the day. But we're going to
love that show.
We're going to call this Sports Court. So, as you heard the unbelievably sexy voice guy say, in the criminal justice world, every single person is entitled to a defense in the United States of America, even though in sports talk radio, we love to lambast people. So, in this situation, the Honorable Judge Sean Mapes is going to assign us whether we're prosecution or defense for the following three members of the Houston Astros organization today. Number one, Jose Abreu.
Okay.
Number two, Ryan Presley. By the way, neither of them played last night. They still lost. And three, good old Jeff Bagwell. Sean is going to assign us who attacks and who defends. And he might have to, from time to time, handle an objection or two.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I wish we had a bailiff. The all rise, and I walk in. But we can't do that. Yeah, maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
So for Jose Abreu, I'm looking at both of you. Neither of you want it. I'm going to say prosecution. I'll go prosecution Paul, defense Joe.
Oh, damn it.
Damn, man.
It's the one I didn't want to defend.
Do you want me to start,
no,
Joe?
Prosecution, your opening statements.
Let the record show that this man to my right has shown up into the court wearing a t-shirt and a baseball hat, number one. Number two, he is doing this while representing Jose Abreu, a man who has been a plague upon our Houston Astros worth $60 million. I find the fact that anyone would be willing to defend this man a stain upon their honor. As a human being, this man, Jose Abreu, has stolen money from you, from me, from the city of Houston, from Mr. Jim Crane's pockets as well. And I find at this moment in time that we must rise to the occasion and convict Jose Abreu of banishment from baseball. All you need to do is look at his numbers. What is he batting? .001? Ladies and gentlemen of the court, the prosecution rests.
Counselor, your defense?
Let's get some facts correct here, okay? He's not batting .001. He's batting .10104. Let me tell you something. You said something that stood out to me, Mr. Prosecutor. You said, look at the stats. This is what the stats tell me. Jose Abreu is a .284 lifetime hitter. Jose Abreu is an MVP.
Objection. Veto. This is back of the baseball
card. That's not what I say. Jose Abreu has almost 1,000 career RBIs. Jose Abreu deserves your respect as a member of the Houston Astros. It's not Jose Abreu's fault. Jeff Bagwell gave him a bad contract. Jose Abreu is just a hardworking man who's supporting his family. And he's trying hard. He voluntarily went to Florida to help this team. You're attacking him is insulting to this man's work ethic.
I gotta say,
MVP.
Sidebar.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Joe, showed up. With your hat on and your t-shirt on.
Disrespecting my court.
Prosecutor goes on the offensive immediately. You know, I thought you were going to be like one of those, $12 an hour defense attorneys.
Well, I did laugh.
Gotta say. Yeah. Well, it was, outside of the laugh, I was impressed. I mean,
yeah.
Man, as soon as I started going back in the baseball card, I was like, I don't know if I can finish this.
That's
all I had.
I give you credit because he attacked you personally. He went low, you went high.
Yeah, I didn't bring up your half t-shirt.
You didn't even dress it. That's why first case gets awarded to the defense.
Let's go.
Okay.
Abreu, a free man. It's a bet eighth tonight.
As we workshop this segment, we do have to determine what we are accusing these people of. Good question.
I think theft.
And being a stain upon the community.
Yeah, that's definitely what you just accused him of, for sure.
You didn't even really mention baseball.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, at this point.
Yeah, I feel like I was more attacked than Jose Abreu.
No.
And Jose Abreu is like a man. Was attacked. Like, okay, next case.
What are we charging Ryan Presley with?
So I think what we should charge Ryan Presley with is that perhaps he needs to be institutionalized. We are determining whether or not to institutionalize him in West Palm Beach.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
This is old school 50s and 60s court when people got sent to mental wards.
Okay.
Things got dicey.
And for this one, I'm going to flip it. Prosecution, Joe. Defense, Paul.
Okay. Ryan Pressly must go to Florida. Ryan Pressly is a man who has pitched in the eighth inning multiple times in his life. He was not a closer when he came to Houston. He should be fully able to mentally and physically handle the challenges of pitching in a baseball game that's not in the ninth inning. Ryan Pressly is failing to do his job because why? Because he's old? Because he's soft? Because he's mentally weak? Why is Ryan Pressly failing? Only Ryan Pressly knows. And only Ryan Pressly and the Houston Astros can figure this out in Florida. He must not be a member of the Astros organization here in Houston or Seattle or Oakland or wherever the team is traveling to. Ryan Pressly is failing consistently. Ryan Pressly must go.
Defense.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, let the record show that Ryan Pressly's last name is similar to that of a little someone by the nickname of The King. Because that's what Ryan Pressly is for Astros postseason pitchers. He ain't no Billy Wagner. He ain't any of these other bozos who came into games and blew it against guys like Albert Pujols and Carlos Beltran and whatever Chicago White Sox were on that team that beat him in 05. Ryan Pressly has been an important member of the community for the city of Houston and for the Houston Astros. And in a bullpen that has dealt with some issues this year, you'll notice that some of those bullpenners are pitching a little bit better of late. Josh Hader, and on top of that, Brian Abreu, especially last night. Some people might say that was their doing alone, but I like to believe that Mr. Ryan Pressly put his hand on each of their shoulders, and by God, the two men, much like when Ray Lewis touched Jacoby Jones' chest in that Super Bowl return to kickoff for a touchdown, I believe that he inspired the Lord into those two last night to help the Houston Astros out and get to extra innings. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Ryan Pressly needs to be a Houston Astro.
I'm still recovering from the Ray Lewis.
No, not on my bingo card.
You know, when...
We're just riffing.
When you're defending someone in a court of law, especially a court of sports law, I would generally try to stay away from it, comparing my client to Ray Lewis, of all people. Having said that, I think I got to give it to Paul.
Wow.
All right.
2 for 2 on the defense.
Yeah.
Sure. Sean, live much?
Yeah, right? now, maybe the toughest for the defense.
I'll take it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, Joe, I think a good public defender here.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll part of me that. Wants to not give you it because you want it to be the defense. But since it's the first time we're doing this, yes, Paul prosecuting. Joe defense for Jeff Bagwell. Jeff Bagwell, the greatest Astro in Astros history before the current run that we're on.
Okay.
Now he's like third or fourth.
So, Joe, let the record state that this man actively sought to defend Jeff Bagwell. Okay? Honestly, I should just put my beautiful briefcase that I bought from Amazon for $30 on the table and just leave the room. I don't need to do another thing here. Since Jeff Bagwell has become involved with the Houston Astros, we have not only seen a slow decline from an organization that was so smart, so careful under Jeff Luhnow, so brilliant with James Click, we have seen this organization turn into one that no longer is run by someone qualified to scout players. What does Dana Brown even do? What is he even allowed to do? Much like with the infamous person by the name of Furkus, who used to be in the analytical part of the Houston Astros, has Jeff Bagwell locked Dana Brown in a room with calculators and glasses on deep into the hours of the night? Has Dana Brown seen his family in weeks and years because Jeff Bagwell put on his varsity Letterman jacket and threaded him with a swirly? I do not know. What I do know is that ever since Jeff Bagwell and Jim Crane started hanging out, all of a sudden the Houston Astros are making decisions that would make me, a friend, concerned. Ladies and gentlemen, the prosecution must find a way
to keep Jeff Bagwell
out
of the Houston Astros organization. Their restraining order is what I asked for, Judge Sean Mapes.
The defense.
Judge Sean Mapes, I'd like to enter into evidence here. MLB.com/Astros/team/front-office. Under baseball operations, general manager, it says Dana Brown. Assistant general manager, Andrew Ball. Assistant general manager, Charles Cook. Assistant general manager, Gavin Dickey. If the title doesn't fit, you must acquit. Jeff Bagwell is not, according to MLB.com/Astros/team/front-office, a member of the Astros baseball operations department. He is not responsible for the actions of the GM of the Houston Astros. Jeff Bagwell is not a member of the organization in that way. He is a part of the alumni section of this website. He is not a member of the baseball operations. It is not Jeff Bagwell's fault. He is, as Judge Sean Mapes said, once the greatest baseball player in Astros history. He is a Hall of Famer. He is not to blame for these problems. He's not the GM. Defense settled.
Defense rests.
The defense settled with him as a defender, Your Honor, for Mr. Jeff Bagwell.
I will say, I do like our... I do like the use of our first use of evidence in this court proceeding. That is nice. However, the prosecution did bring up one man that I honestly forgot about.
Ferkus.
Yep, Bill Ferkus. And
I forgot his first name.
I had to Google it.
I bet the Astros front office forgot that too when they were making him.
He's also on the Astros directory somewhere.
Oh, he's still there.
I think it's an old pitch. So in that case, I'm awarding the prosecution the victory there.
I think Joe did very good, though, as a defense attorney.
Did the best you could.
Did the best you could.
Rhymed. That's good. But, yes, unlike the O.J. Simpson trial, I'm ignoring the evidence, but I'm not falling for the rhyme.
We tried. Tried our best.
That's all we can do.
That was good.
I tried to defend back.
But the guys did.
I enjoyed it. And honestly, the Twitch saying that they didn't like it basically makes me think, especially based off the YouTube and the text line, like, oh, so it was good. Okay, yeah. Cool. We'll bring it back next week. Maybe we'll bring it back next segment. It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch as well at ESPN 97.5. Coming up next, I want to make fun of the Jaguars some more instead of talking about the, you know, Astros and the most recent loss. And on top of that, this guy has quite the ego. First, though, we're going to get into an NFL countdown. Stick around. It is Gallant and George.
Football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
Okay, we are 98 days away.
Let's go.
From the start of the NFL season. 98.
Thank God. 98 more days where we only have the Astros to talk about.
Oh, those are bad vibes, dog. Those are bad vibes.
They're good vibes. It's less than 100 days.
Yeah, but it's still like close to 100 days.
Yeah, good point.
Bad vibes alert, man.
So, I looked up who wore number 98 in the NFL,
okay.
And per Pro Football Reference, Mike Ditka wore it in 1967.
Huh?
For those who don't know, Mike Ditka was actually a very good tight end.
I didn't know that.
And now you know. Anyway, let's go into the big news of the NFL today. Jalen Waddle, Miami Dolphins wide receiver, got paid. He ends up getting a deal that I would imagine is going to frustrate his teammate Tyreek Hill. The specifics of the contract, which are also north of the deal that Nico Collins just got. Per Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network, $84.75 million over 3 years. 76 of it guaranteed. And Joe, earlier in the show, you said that it makes Nick Caserio look better.
Yeah, because if they would have waited on Nico Collins, he would have had to get more than this. So they got this contract done. they set the bar. The fact that you now have Waddle and Devonta Smith, who signed before Nico Collins, he's getting more annually. So Nico falls below both of those guys, when in reality, he might be just as good as them. And he's your number one guy. You know, so the Eagles pay Devonta Smith $25 million per year. They have to pay A.J. Brown more than that. If the Dolphins want to keep Tyreek and keep him happy, they're not going to have to go more than $30 million. They're going to have two wide receivers on their roster worth $55, $56 million, where the Texans, you have Stephon Diggs on a one-year prove-it deal around like $14 million. You have Nico Collins. You have Tank Dell. Nick Cassera's done a great job this offseason with the wide receiver position. I'm very impressed with what he's done.
And Stephon Diggs today at OTA.
He showed up.
So we finally see him in a Texans uniform. I did a little clickbaity video last week on the live stream, acting like it was a huge deal. In a
that he wasn't there.
Crappy Jim Rome voice about him not being there. Yeah, Stephon D. I capitalized GGS Lara me Emmy Tunsil because they weren't there. But yeah, people don't show up at OTAs. It's not a big deal anymore. As soon as Tom Brady stopped going to OTAs in his last couple of seasons with the Patriots, that's sort of when I thought to myself, you know what? If you're good enough, it truly doesn't matter.
It only matters with another wide receiver. Guys like T. Higgins, guys who are on franchise tags.
Who've asked for trades,
and then they're not there. Like, there are very few times it actually matters. Sometimes it's worse. Sometimes you see Aaron Rodgers, like, I don't know, sitting on a bench, messing with his heel a little bit, and not looking super healthy at OTAs, because that's what we're seeing right now. But it's for the most part, you're right, it doesn't matter anymore. That's why the NFL Players Association is voting to get rid of it, because they don't care.
They want longer training camps. If they have longer training camps, they will probably have less preseason games, but they also will probably have more regular season games. So earlier in the show, we talked about former Jaguars kicker Brandon McManus, who I don't believe was the kicker who was kicked by Urban Meyer. But Brandon McManus, on a flight back home with the Jacksonville Jaguars, had been accused of sexual misconduct against a flight attendant. The Jaguars are under investigation right now for having had alcohol and perhaps marijuana on that flight, which is illegal. But, hey, at least you got this story from Jacksonville Jaguars OTAs. During his Tuesday press conference, Doug Peterson said Trevor Lawrence has done a good job progressing in his leadership, saying he is becoming the vocal leader in the locker room, on the field, in meetings. When we got him 3 years ago, he was just learning our system and kind of quiet. By the way, Peterson has only been here for, this is his third year that he's going into right now. And just trying to go through the motions a little bit of just trying to adapt to us and get a feel for us. Now he's engaging and giving us ideas. Now he's giving us suggestions and ideas and really becoming another coach. A set of eyes on the field. Now, it's got to translate on the field into wins and losses and touchdowns versus interceptions. Didn't mention fumbles. You should probably stop doing that. But that's where I've seen the biggest growth in the last few years that we've been together. Sounds like a lot of that change is coming this offseason, Joe. And I got to say, it's a quote. How much do you make out of a quote? But this does not make me feel good about Trevor Lawrence, especially considering the Jaguars maybe needed a little leadership on that plane with all the booze
marijuana. Becoming the vocal leader in the locker room, it's year four for Trevor Lawrence. You're going to have to give him a $50 million contract here in the next, like, 12 months if you want to keep him. You're not going to franchise to tag him. He's not going to be in a Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott situation. I guess Dak's in his second contract. But that you don't want to hear your young quarterback becoming a vocal leader. You want your quarterback to command a room right away. Like, you see what we saw with C.J. Stroud, what you're seeing now with Caleb Williams, what you've seen with Andrew Luck and guys like that in the past, where it's like they immediately show up, they step in, and they're the dude. Trevor Lawrence doesn't have those vibes.
I feel the same way. And, I mean, there were a lot of excuses made for Trevor Lawrence his rookie season with Urban Meyer. And, okay, maybe that was the worst year ever. But, I mean, C.J. Stroud came in here, and everyone looked at him as the leader right away. It's not like Trevor Lawrence was never in a locker room with a lot of other future NFL players. Clemson has put a lot of good players into the league the last couple of years.
is Trevor Lawrence one of those guys who can only succeed in an organization where someone like Dabo Swinney's running the show, someone who's rather authoritative? Doug Peterson's not really that guy because, well, maybe he tried to be in Philadelphia and that cost him his job. But you need a quarterback to be that guy too. And I don't think Trevor Lawrence is bad. I just have questions about Trevor Lawrence that I think are fair to ask because we were told that he was going to be the next great quarterback, and he has been far from that.
Yeah, he has not. He has not developed. And look, and there's a lot that they've done wrong as an organization. I mean, Urban Meyer, like you go back to the beginning, the Texans did this weird charade where they pretended like Davis Mills and CJ were in a quarterback competition, but they squashed that pretty early.
Yeah.
The Jags, if you think back to it, they went through all training camp with Urban Meyer as the head coach, and they were splitting snaps that whole preseason between Gardner Minshew and Trevor Lawrence. And we all knew the end result was going to be Trevor Lawrence was the week one quarterback. And like organizations who do that, the Texans, Bill O'Brien did that. It's such a it's a dishonest thing that you do when 90% of the time the rookie quarterback's just going to start. And also, Trevor Lawrence, it never should have been a competition between him and Gardner. Like but to me, it was clear from then he didn't blow Gardner out of the water. And that's why CJ, as an example, was able to put that to bed so quickly just in training camps and OTAs. Mm-hmm. Just of the four quarterbacks in the AFC South, he would be the one I'm least confident in right now.
That wow. You know what? I will say this about Will Levis, Jeremy's guy. I think Will Levis is going to die on the field. That guy.
Yeah.
Sean's laughing.
I was ready for you to like not say die on the field. I thought you were going to say, I think he's going to be pretty good. Make a Pro Bowl. Win a playoff game.
I'm truly concerned. I mean, remember that last Texans-Titans game at the very end where it looked like he got hurt and he put himself back in there? I think he's too tough for his own good. And I heard other people talking about this. I think it was Mina Kimes and Nate Tice on a podcast. And I was like, damn, they're right. Like, they mentioned this time where Levis was trying to jump for a first down that was like 4 yards away, and he just launches his body, doesn't slide. And I think he got Rosencoptered.
Will Levis is going to have these stretches where when you turn on ESPN the next day, they're going to be talking about him as a top 10 quarterback. But it might be like a 4-game stretch, and then the next 4 games, they'll be saying, how is this guy in the NFL?
Does have good receivers.
Like that to me is what he's going to be. He is going to be the most like roller coaster. Think about his first game in the NFL.
I was
going to
say, just even within games, he's so boom or bust because he chucks it deep, man.
Yeah. Like he's going to have big moments where they're awesome, and then he's going to be Brett Favre, but 10 times worse with his decision making. Like, he's going to be a roller coaster.
Does Trevor Lawrence have the lowest ceiling out of every quarterback in the AFC South? Every starting quarterback?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, which is crazy.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I think he has a higher floor than Levis and Richardson, too.
Agreed.
But as far as, like, who do I see being future, like, superstar quarterback in the league, I'm not sure if I'd put Levis ahead of...
I would put him ahead of Richardson.
But ahead of Lawrence.
Oh, God. Gotcha.
Levis ahead of Lawrence.
Like what's Trevor Lawrence's peak? Like, what's the quarterback comp? Like, is it
14th,
13th, a more 12th. Athletic, like, Kirk Cousins? And, like, with Levis, it's Josh Allen. Like, if everything were to go right for Will Levis, he could be the next Josh Allen. He's super athletic. He's got a gun for an arm. He's huge. He's got the toughness. Like, that's his, like, peak quarterback level. And we've only seen him for a handful of games at this point. Like, do you think
the sex tape? Apparently, like, allegedly.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, that came out over the weekend. Yeah.
Then he's definitely the next Brett
Favre. Will Levis and his lady allegedly like to record themselves. So the one that you saw at the NFL draft. Yes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I'll do some more research.
that's not what anyone wanted to hear. Yeah. It's Galata George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Yeah, I'm with you guys on that front, though, that Lawrence, right now, because those guys are all going into their second year, the ceiling is a little bit lower. We'll see what happens. Up next, hey, didn't even talk about CJ Stroud in that segment. What are we doing? Ratings goldmine. But guys, on the other side, I'm going to battle red pill you a little bit. Something that CJ Stroud won yesterday has me concerned about something that's always been said about the Texans. You'll hear what that is next. Stick around. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie and MyBookie.ag. Go to the website and you sign up with promo code BET975, and you're going to get an awesome deposit bonus of up to $1,000 as soon as you sign up. Guess what else? You can also bet on more than just sports. You want to play blackjack? They got it. You want to play poker? They got it. They also have live dealers on the website, but you can bet on sports too. Game number 5, Timberwolves Mavericks. Timberwolves 4.5-point favorites. Can the Timberwolves make it a 3-2 series? What are you thinking? I'm looking at this number, the over-under, 209.5. I know Minnesota supposedly has a good defense, but they also don't seem to have an answer for the combination of Luka and Kyrie Irving. And, I mean, you saw in the last game, Minnesota, specifically Karl-Anthony Towns, finally wake up a little bit. As this series wears on, do the Mavericks get as tired as the Timberwolves have looked at times? I don't know. I feel like there's going to be less defense in this game. It's going to be high scoring. So I'm hitting over 209.5. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Returning subscribers, you get a deposit bonus. New subscribers, you get a deposit bonus. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.ag.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
In case you were under a rock last night, or maybe you don't like pitchers' duels taking place on the West Coast, the Astros lost in 10 innings to the Seattle Mariners 2-1 after a walk-off J.P. Crawford sack fly off of Taylor Scott, who finally had not a bad inning, but not a great inning either. He had two walks in the inning. You got the runner on second base already. You're kind of screwed. Today, in a little over an hour, the Astros are going to try to avoid a four-game sweep and avoid a sixth straight loss to their stepfather, the Seattle Mariners. Logan Gilbert on the hill for Seattle. He's a good pitcher. Spencer Arrighetti on the mound for Houston. And the noteworthy changes of the lineup today, there is no Chaz McCormick. There is no Yiner Diaz. Victor Caratini is going to be catcher in the seventh spot. Mauricio Dubon's playing right field. In left field, it's Yordan Alvarez with Kyle Tucker, the designated hitter. There is a Jose Abreu who did not play last night. He is batting eighth. George.
Sweet. Yep. Can't wait. We'll see how, if they can get a fourth straight quality start, that'd be awesome. JV was great again. 9 strikeouts. His second straight start with 9 strikeouts. And I think it was Chandler tweeted this out. Josh Hader, 16 of the last 32 batters he's faced, he's struck out.
If we're looking for positives, last night Verlander, last night Josh Hader,
yep.
Last night Brian Abreu. And Verlander, we gave him a little bit of grief not too long ago for saying, well, a lot of people know I'm working on mechanics. No, we did not know that, but now that he shared them with us, his last two outings, he's looked very good. Mm-hmm. So some of your pitchers are finally pitching like the guys that you thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year, but the ultimate problem for the Astros is the bats have not done a whole lot of anything. Play some Justin Verlander comments on that later on in the show. Guys, sometimes we like to give you the deep steel blue pill.
Mm-hmm.
The deep steel blue pill, much like in the Matrix, that thing is basically keeping you in fantasy land. Everything's going to be happy. You're going to be eating that fake steak instead of eating basically oatmeal when you're in that gross spaceship that they're like hiding from the aliens in, or whatever the hell, robots in the Matrix. But sometimes you got to get battle red pilled. Look, guys, it's not all roses. It's not all sunshine. It's not all rainbows.
Heretics dare to question the Houston Texans' greatness.
How dare you?
Is it bullshit?
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong.
Or will you take this battle red pill?
You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Now work with me now, guys. For years and years, it was said that the Houston Texans had too many Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
That is true this year.
Hand up, I was one of those people. They're like, come on, get some edge.
Well, I don't know, Joe, Sean, how much edge they have right now, because C.J. Stroud has been elected the 2024 winner of the Good Guy
Award. Let's go, C.J.
But do you know what the Good Guy Award is for, Joe?
No.
So the Good Guy Award praises dealings with local and national media.
So whoever, like, talks the nicest to you?
So this wasn't about him, like, picking up branches after the derecho.
Yeah.
This is him giving nice, long, eloquent answers to DJ and Cody.
Yeah.
I think it is.
And McAfee. Did a lot of McAfee this year.
Well, wait, was it local and national? Or just
this
local?
Is the national version.
Yeah, this is the second time CJ Stroud's got this award.
Oh.
So he won the local chapter.
He got a local one.
And now he won the national one.
Yeah.
Is it like American Idol with, like, he won his region and now he went to...
He won one of the 32 local versions, and then now he's won the national.
They should have made this a bracket show.
Oh. I can't believe they
the
don't.
Good guy bracket.
I mean, what are also the Pro Football Writers of America doing right now?
People made a big deal about the schedule, at least. Make this a big deal.
Yeah, where's the sound?
Let's pit good guys against each other.
Mr. President, DJ Bien-Aimé, it's nice to see that he got something done on a national level.
Let's go, DJ.
CJ Stroud, to make this even worse, released a statement.
To make him being a good guy even worse.
He released a statement.
He's trying to go for a back-to-back already.
Yeah.
He's helping the media out here. This is a good guy. I can't believe he released the statement. Quote, "First and foremost, I want to give all glory and praise to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. It's a blessing to be recognized as the PFWA, Football Writers Association, Good Guy Award winner, and it stands out to me because it's more of an award that embodies someone's character rather than the stats they compile on the field. I appreciate the job the media has and thank them for choosing me as someone who is deserving of this honor. A special shout out to the other very deserving players who were nominated and those that won before me." I had never heard of this award until this offseason.
Is there a list online of the Good Guy of the Year?
There is.
Through the years?
Oh.
There probably is. I don't want to go any further down that rabbit hole, okay, guys? Red pill me out of that.
Let's see who's won three in a
row. No, we're not going to look at that. This is a very goofy story. CJ Stroud's done a lot of good things that have nothing to do with his conversations with media that should be praised, especially leading up after the derecho. But to go back to what I brought up a little bit earlier about how the Houston Texans sometimes have been considered to have too many Boy Scouts, just an interesting story coming out of the Kansas City Chiefs today. The Kansas City Chiefs, who of course have seen Rashee Rice do literally everything you would do in Grand Theft Auto this offseason outside of kill someone, he assaulted someone at a Dallas nightclub and played a little let's go 150 in my Lambo on the highway. Well, you also have a story that involves Chiefs defensive lineman Isaiah Bugs, who has been charged with cruelty to dogs in the second degree after two dogs were left on the back porch of a home that was rented by him. Screened in porch with no access to food or water, they appeared malnourished and neglected.
Kill him. The dude. Death penalty.
Good edit.
Are you making fun of someone with that death penalty?
No, I'm just saying, I think that if you do this to dogs, that you should be put in the same situation.
Oh.
You leave a dog in the car for 4 hours with no AC? That should be your punishment. See how it goes. A 500-pound fat offensive lineman or defensive lineman, whoever he is. First of all, this guy's a nobody, so he should be cut. 300. I think it should be equal punishment. Eye for an eye.
Eye for an eye.
I don't entirely disagree. Yeah.
I'm surprised the two cat guys are coming out this hard.
Hey, easy. I was a dog guy first.
That is a way to learn empathy. Now, you might cook, but...
It's all right. Definitely
a bad look for the Chiefs, but the Chiefs, they've got some guys who have been question marks off the field. They used to have Frank Clark. They used to have Jaron Reed. Look up their details. And also, offensive lineman Wanya Morris and Chuk Wubuka Godrick were arrested recently on misdemeanor possession of marijuana.
The worst crime of all.
The Chiefs are... The Chiefs do not care. Tyreek Hill, they do not care. Chiefs are going for a three-peat. Do the Texans need... to stop being good guys and start being bad guys.
I was going to say, look at the scoreboard. Won a lot of Super Bowls with these guys.
Here's the thing, though. OK, Okay, I want to counter your battle red pill with a deep steel blue pill.
Okay.
They acquired Joe Mixon.
Nah.
They added a locker room issue guy in Stephon Diggs. They added a guy who, like, I've heard has stuff written into his contract about not driving too fast.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at Joe. Joe has sources.
I do have a source.
That's a good one.
I don't know if it's in his Texans contract, but it was in his previous team's contract.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah.
Wow. So there you go, guys.
Jeff Okuda.
Nope.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to play the guessing game.
Perhaps a battle red pill to have us all concerned.
Not enough bad dudes.
Is it Tommy Townsend?
No.
The punter they got from the Chiefs?
That would make sense.
That would have been a good guess, though. Maybe, also, they added a guy from the Chiefs.
Yeah, they added a bad guy.
Yeah.
I am assuming.
The Chiefs said, hey, we need to fix our problems. That's why they have Justin Reed. And that's why we got the Chiefs punter.
Joe, you have blue-pilled my red pill.
Let's go.
I like it. He's Joe George. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Give me some Clay Walker. It is Gallant and George on ESPN at 97.5. And 92.5. Interesting comments made by Justin Verlander after last night's game. And I will explain the reason I'm wearing what I'm wearing today. Don't go anywhere. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And ESPN Houston on YouTube.